It's 6 minutes after 10. I'm Cara Laurence. Well, listeners may know my guest this morning in any number of ways, through music, through theater, comedy, television, and radio. But I want to tell a story about how I first intersected with my guest, Wayne Powers, this morning. It was one of those Sundays when I thought I deserved a mimosa, and I headed out to the Old Dog for their jazz brunch, and spent a couple hours listening to these young students at Western trying out their things and experimenting here and there, and suddenly a singer came up and sounded so sure of himself and took us all into his world that it was like hearing really the voice of experience triumphing over the young and untested. And I'm sure it wasn't a contest, but Wayne, it was a delight to hear you that day.
Well, that's awfully nice of you. Thank you.
And as it turned out, there's so much more to tell about your life, where you've been and where you've gone, and
And where I'm going.
And where you're
I'm not
going.
Finished yet.
Well, tomorrow night, you'll be at the Union Cabaret and Grill. You'll be singing and also sharing your new music with Kalamazoo audience.
I'm excited to do this. I really am. The Union is a terrific place. It's right on the Kalamazoo Mall, it's a place I frequent because it's when you're talking about live music. Much too many of the places. Music is an afterthought. It's thrown into a corner with no lights, no stage. They just move a table. Oh, yeah, we'll throw the musicians over there. And
like the ficus plant.
It's exactly. So, you know, you could put a jukebox there. It doesn't matter. And the Union is exactly the opposite. It's designed for music. There's a stage, lighting. It's just a terrific room. And nice folks, great food, friendly folks, and conveniently located. I mean, you can't beat it.
Strong emphasis on jazz and live performance.
Yes, indeed. So, absolutely.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. That this is where you would head to for a CD release concert.
Right.
Now, one of the things to know about this album is that it's not your first, but it's the first in a long while.
25 years, yeah. It's been 25 years since I recorded an album. I've just been kind of busy. I've been distracted. Life kind of took hold. And I had a band on the West Coast. I lived for 20 years in Los Angeles, where I was doing network television mostly. And I kind of got, one of my goals was to have my own sitcom. And because I started doing Laverne and Shirley when I was in my 20s, I used to be the cop on Laverne and Shirley. That was my first television experience. And that was a great goal of mine. And but it wasn't my show, you know. And so many years later, in the early 89, 90, I got to do my own show. I was one of the stars of a show called 13 East, which was a sitcom on NBC for two seasons. And then we got canceled after two seasons of winning our time slot every week. We were on Saturday nights just before Golden Girls, and we won our time slot every week. But the head of the network changed, and the new head of the network sort of thought of our show as the old head of the network's show, so he just canceled it and put on a show, almost the same show. It was crazy. And so you realize that, you know, in the world of network television, as in many places, in corporate America, a lot of places, you really have no control over your work, your future. Even if you do everything that's expected of you and you exceed that, and even if you do tremendously well and achieve great goals farther than anybody anticipated, you still have no control. At a whim, they can cancel you, and they don't need a reason because they can. And so I realized I needed to get back to someplace where I had more control over my work, my art. And I started out in New York as a jazz singer when I was 16, and I was awful. But, you know, but
you were awful.
I was awful. Of course, I was 16. What did I know about this stuff? I was singing in this horrible place called the Seven Pines with the Del Angelo Orchestra, which is four drunk guys, you know, sitting in a corner, you know. And, you know, I'm exaggerating, but it really was, you know, it was beginner level. But I learned a lot. And there were, as far as jazz is concerned, in the same building was the Downbeat Room. So I would sneak downstairs in the kitchen staircase, go downstairs, because it was owned by the same guy, and he owned everything in that neighborhood. And I go downstairs and I hear Ahmad Jamal and Thelonious Monk and all these people in person.
Okay.
And it was just like, oh my gosh. And then I go back upstairs and, you know, and sing with the Dell'Angelo Orchestra. You know? But what you don't know is I was sure I was a singer, but I was also a waiter and I was a bar, you know, bar back and everything. So I just changed jackets. I had a black pants, a white shirt, a bow tie, and whatever they needed me to do, I would change jackets. I put a gold jacket on to be a waiter, a red jacket on to be behind the bar, and a black jacket on to sing with the band.
You could do everything.
So
you're absorbing lessons there. You're picking up music. You're seeing the greats do their thing.
Well, yeah. And then, you know, through the years, I graduated college in St. Louis and stayed there and put together a nightclub there for a hotel chain. It was a 1920s nightclub, a speakeasy. And we put together a 1920s band, totally authentic, all original instrumentation, C melody sax, it was incredible.
Cool.
And we put together this real speakeasy. It was called The Flower Shop, and it was a fake flower shop inside a hotel, and you had to ring a buzzer, and then a little slat in the wall would open up and go, what's the password, you know? And whatever you said, that was the password. And the whole wall would open up, and you'd walk into this 1920s nightclub. I had a chorus line of flapper girls, and we did a whole, like, it was like going back in time.
Absolutely. So, what a great idea.
Yeah, and then back
in... Is it gone now?
Oh, I'm sure it is, yeah. But it was at the time, there was a line waiting to get into this flower shop at nighttime. And people staying in the hotel couldn't figure out what's going on. So then, that was, you know, my history in music. And then when I was in L.A., I worked for Henry Mancini, and that's when I did my landed in L.A. I kind of fell into that job, and I worked for Henry Mancini. I managed all of his music publishing. And,
okay. Yeah. When you say you worked for Henry Mancini, like how did you do that? What was
it? Well, that's a story. I left St. Louis and had my dog and my car and a few belongings in a U-Haul trailer in the back. And I stayed at a friend's house in an apartment, one-bedroom apartment on the couch, while I was looking for an apartment that would accept a dog. And a friend of mine who I'd done dinner theater with, Jim McCrell, who used to be the host of Celebrity Sweepstakes, I called him and he said, you know, well, look me up. You know, all the people said, look me up when I'm in L.A. So I said, I called him up and he said, well, come on over. So I went over to this wonderful, beautiful mansion in the hills. The maid lets me in and I go through and Mr. McCrell is out back by the pool. And I go out back by the pool and there he is. And there's a kidney-shaped pool with a jacuzzi in the indentation of the kidney. And there's Jim sitting there in the jacuzzi getting a haircut. And I said, I'm in Hollywood. So he was on the phone with Henry Mancini, and he's talking to Mancini. He puts his hand up for me, you know, give me a second to finish this call. And finally puts his hand over the phone. He says, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, well, gee, I was hoping I could come back here. He said, just a moment. He goes back and he says, I'll send him over tomorrow. And it was Henry Mancini looking for someone to run the music publishing. I went over and met with Henry Mancini, and he was just a magnificent. I mean, I can't speak highly enough of the man. Everybody called him Hank, but me, I could never call Henry Mancini. I could call him Mr. Mancini. I could call him Henry. I couldn't call him Hank because he wasn't. He was so elegant and such a great artist. And I'm sitting there having our meeting. And I'm thinking, you know, gee, you know, we're getting along pretty well here, you know. So he pushes his chair back a little, you know, signifying the meeting is coming to an end. So I get ready to go up, and he said, no, just a minute. He said, let me just ask you, out of all the songs I've written, what's your personal favorite? And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this interview had gone so well, you know,
up until now.
Now, what do I do? So I said, look, Mr. Mancini, I said, I'll be honest with you. I love everything you've ever written. And that's the truth. I was telling the truth. And I said, Baby Elephant Walk, Mr. Lucky, Peter Gunn, Moon River, Days of Wine and Roses. I mean, you just go on forever. You know, the Pink Panther theme. I said, there's one song that you wrote that it was a theme from a movie. It was never really a big hit on its own, but every time I hear that melody, it went all through the movie, and every time I hear that melody, I get goosebumps. It's just the most beautiful melody. And he said, what song was that? And I was panicking. I said, just tell him the truth. And now I'm blanking on the name of the song. Holy cow.
What's that movie?
It's the same as the name of the song. It's called, I said, okay, it's called Two for the Road. And there was a long pause, and he leaned back in his chair, and he looked at me and he said, that's my favorite. And I went, bang, zoom, I got this job. And I did. That's how I got to work for Henry Mancini for a couple of years when I arrived in L.A. And I was able to find my way around. I'd never even visited L.A. before.
I'm trying to keep up with you. You went from New Jersey to L.A.
Yeah.
But the thing is, what is it that you have that a little bit of luck is required, I'm sure.
A whole lot. A whole lot.
You're a polymath in a lot of ways.
Well, what does it say on it? It's right on my website. It's a fine line that separates a Renaissance man from a dilettante. You know, and I think that's true. There's nothing I'm not interested in. I'm interested in everything. I love people, and I have a great interest in everything. But I'm a very passionate person by nature. And so when I pursue something, I pursue it with my heart and soul. Mm-hmm. So I went from Henry Mancini, and I said, well, here I am. And it got to a point where the corporations, he gave me his old office. I had an office at the corner of Sunset and Vine overlooking the Hollywood sign with a grand piano and gold records on the wall. You know, I had a private secretary, and the wall opened up to a wet bar. I had a private executive washroom in my office. It was crazy. And I said, and then he was getting absorbed, his publishing company was getting absorbed by something called Interworld, which was a huge conglomerate at the time. And then that was absorbed afterwards. You know, the music business is crazy.
Yeah.
But so he said, he called me in. He said, well, I'm going to get you a job with Interworld. I said, no, Mr. Mancini, I said, I can't. I said, this is not why I came here. And I had been working, doing improv comedy with someone named Robin Williams, who nobody knew of. And we were doing improv comedy on Friday and Saturday nights. And I just immersed myself in that. And that's how I got Laverne and Shirley and started my television career.
Improv comedy was a very new idea.
Very new. Well, it was new being popular. It had been old because Second City preceded us, the Compass Players, you know, in San Francisco. There were real, true pioneers, but we were one of the very early ones in modern days. You know, it goes back, you know, to really bohemian sort of, you know, coffee house sort of stuff,
right,
early before us. And we were part of that transition.
It wasn't considered a farmhouse of talent like it is today.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
So
neither was stand-up comedy. You know, stand-up comedy was, you know, the Comedy Store and all those places were relatively new.
So you were with a small group of people who were kind of creating improv as a group.
Yeah, it was called Off the Wall.
Off the Wall.
It still exists.
Fantastic.
Yeah, on the West Coast, sure does. And they were just terrific. Robin was one of the members. And other members, you know, went on to be producers and writers. And John Ritter used to come and guest with us. We had a piano player. The substitute piano player, when our regular piano player couldn't come in, was Michael Feinstein.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
He couldn't get any better than that.
I mean, but just, you know, it's a small... It was a small cocoon world.
I'm speaking with Wayne Powers here today on WMUK. And as you can tell, there's a lot of stories to tell. But I want to remind listeners that he'll be in concert at the Union Cabaret and Grill tomorrow night, starting at 7 o'clock, downtown Kalamazoo. And that's where you'll be able to pick up your own copy of his new album, his first in 25 years. It's called If Love Were All. And it's filled with ballads and some good swinging numbers as well. Great American Songbook highlights.
Yeah, the only true Great American Songbook, the only is not truly Great American Songbook is the title song, If Love Were All, which was a Noel Coward tune.
There you go.
You know, but aside from that, it's all American, Great American Songbook. Yeah. And it's a very personal album. It really is. It was something I had to do. You know, I'm an artist, you know, so whatever the medium is, I do things that I feel I have to do so I can get behind it. I can't sing a song if I don't believe in the lyrics, if I can't get behind the lyrics.
I still want to find out about what happened after Off the Wall and where you went from there. But it's time now to take a break and listen to one of these new tracks.
Oh, terrific.
And, you know, you're going to let me choose, aren't you?
Of course I am, yeah.
I think I could use a shot of energy on this Monday, this rainy Monday, and I'm going to start with You've Changed.
Oh, that's nice.
All right, here it is. And you're with pianist Keith Davis, bassist Ron Brendel, and drummer Al Sergel.
Sergel.
And we'll hear about them, too, after we listen to this track, You've Changed, from the new Wayne Powers album.
You've changed, that sparkle in your eye is gone. Your smile is just a careless yawn. I can't understand, you've changed. You've changed. Your kisses now are so blasé. You're bored with me in every way. You're breaking my heart, you've changed. You've forgotten the words, I love you. Each memory that we share, you ignore every star above you. I can't realize you ever cared. You've changed. You're not the angel I once knew. No need to tell me that we're through. It's all over now. You've changed. Memory that we share, you ignore every star above you. I can't realize you ever care. You've changed. You're not the angel I once knew. No need to tell me that we're through. It's all over now. You've changed.
Well, I hope listeners can understand now what I meant earlier when I said Wayne Powers just takes you into his embrace. And sings a lovely song. That's You've Changed, from the new album.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. It really is, and it's a very old song. It's one of those ones that people say I remind them of Billy Eckstine, which I just say, oh my gosh, good heavens, good heavens.
That's nice company.
get some Q-tips for your ears, lad. But what a great compliment. But it's when I sing. I don't sing notes. I sing, I tell stories with music. And that's the beauty of music. Music is universal. And if you can't touch someone through music, you're doing it wrong, in my opinion. Music is not cerebral. So all of the songs, this entire album that you're listening to, was recorded live in the studio without, you know, overdubbing and stuff like that. We did every song live, everybody playing together. Not, oh, we'll lay down the rhythm tracks and we put the horns in, then the vocals come in last. No, that becomes clinical.
Yeah.
And it's not organic, and therefore the human ear doesn't take it in as deeply because you don't trust it subconsciously. It doesn't sound human to you.
Too clean.
Yeah, it is. It's too perfect.
Yeah.
And what I want is authenticity and truth in music. And so we recorded every song live in studio, and, very unusual, we did every song on the album in sequence. I knew the sequence of the songs I wanted. They tell a story when you put them together. There's a beginning, middle, and an end. And I wanted the musicians and me to travel the same journey as the listener.
So you allowed those rough edges here and there to stay in.
Oh, yeah.
When the temptation really is in this day and age, you can erase them so easily.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it becomes clinical. It becomes dead. It becomes mathematical. And that's not organic to me. You know, I like, you know, the purity. We did an album, my last album, and I actually brought this for you as a gift. It's out of print.
Holy cow.
And this is live in the studio, and it's a lot of New Orleans sounds, a whole different kind of sound. But we did it the same way, live in the studio. And, you know, it's some great, great stuff on there. It's called, it's Wayne Powers and his Hoi Polloi, which is, you know, people say, oh, yeah, it's the high class. No, it's exactly the opposite. Hoi Polloi was the riffraff, the common folk. The hoity-toity, that was the high, that was the upper class.
Oh,
the Hoi Polloi was the low class.
I've mixed that up my whole life.
Everybody does. So it's what the lower classes like to think of themselves as, the Hoi Polloi. So we had a bunch of riffraff in that band, some great, great players. My bass player used to play for Sarah Vaughan, and my trumpet player played for Elvis. And it was a great West Coast band. We played all the top West Coast venues, Vine Street. We followed Dizzy Gillespie. We followed Anita O'Day. We played the Cinegrill at the Hollywood Roosevelt, followed Buddy Greco and Joan Rivers. Hmm. We were quite a band in the West Coast.
So with the time that elapsed between albums, how did you keep up your singing?
Well, I always sing. You know, I sing at home. I sing in the car. And I go to jazz clubs, and wherever I've lived, I've always made sure I knew the local jazz musicians, and I'll go and sit in. Like when you saw me at the Old Dog, I was just sitting in with some great, young, talented jazz musicians. There is so much talent, Kara, there is so much talent in Kalamazoo at WMU in the music department. It's frightening. I think it's one of the best kept secrets in the music business, because I will tell you, I'll guarantee you that you take a roster of the people coming out of the program there, and 20 years from now, you go back and look at those names, 75% of them are going to be names you're going to really recognize. And I mean, I really predict that. And this will be recorded. Somebody's going to play this back in 20 years and go, he was right. He was right.
Wayne Powers got it right.
It is maybe the only thing I ever got right, but I got that right.
Well, we're here today to talk about your new album. It's called If Love Were All, and the CD release celebration is tomorrow, Tuesday night at 7
Right.
O'clock.
I can tell you that it was released on Friday. Okay, and a CD Baby, this last Friday, the 3rd, and CD Baby, CDBaby.com, had it available. It sold out in the first day. So now they're restocking from Kabaki Records and getting it restocked, so it'll be available again. You can get on a waiting list at CDBaby.com to get the actual CD, or it can be downloaded, which is high-res downloading at Amazon or iTunes or whatever your favorite platform is.
So it is available online.
It is available online now, and this week, within a matter of a day or two, it'll be available again, but you can get on the waiting list for it now.
Great. What if we listen to another track now?
What do you want to listen to?
Perhaps All of Me.
Oh, that's a fun one.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything about it. We're just going to let people listen to that.
Okay. You can pick up your own copy tomorrow night at the Union Cabaret and Grill in downtown Kalamazoo. Wayne Powers, you'll be playing with the group of musicians.
No. Well, I picked a couple of great local musicians who we're playing with. It's going to be like a party, and it's going to be very loose, and I get to meet folks, and we'll talk, and we'll chat, and we'll play some tunes, and it's going to be a fun time.
All of me. Why not take all of me? Can't you see I am no good without you? Take my arms, I want to lose them. Take these lips, I'll never use them. Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. How can I go on, dear, without you? You took the part that once was my heart. So why not? Why not take all of me? And so I'm pleading, come on back, pretty baby, come back. Don't you know I can't go on and live alone without you? I beg you, darling, won't you think about my fate before it's too late? Don't be mean, I'll go insane. You don't want to have no crazy person on your conscience. Please understand, I got no backup plan on how to live without your love. You walked off very hasty, drove me nearly crazy, got me crying like a baby, no ambition, very lazy, oh, cared for nothing at all. Oh, I can't get you off my mind, dream about you all the time. Must you be so mean and so unkind? Come and set me free, come on, get the rest of me. Come on, come on.
It's a quick ending, boy. I love that. Kind of catches you by surprise. The whole song catches you by surprise. You think it's going to go somewhere because it's a true dramatic love ballad. It's a very plaintive tune about someone who's very saddened by an incomplete love affair and wants this woman back or this person back and then to turn and do the vocalese and stuff. You're still singing the same words. You're still expressing the same way, but you do it in a lighter way. The whole album, I told you, is a personal album, and it's a story. It is a story. It's a universal story. It's a story of the heartbreak and joy of love lost and love found. And that's what this album is all about. And everybody has some way of connecting to that.
Sure.
And I wanted to connect to that in every listener so that they could listen to this and they bring their experience to the words and the stories and the music on the album. And that's the objective. And it's one of those things where I'm talking about it now. To be honest with you, in interviews, I don't really talk about that because either you get it or you don't, you know, kind of. You know, the music is there. If the music is just music to you, okay, let it be music. It's meant to be enjoyed. But if you get it, if you understand that there's a lot more there, then you'll receive it on that level. I don't usually talk about that, so I'm surprised you got me to talk about it. How'd you do that, Kara?
I just turned on the microphone.
Yeah, I know. You're like a therapist. You sit there and just sit back and look at me with those kind eyes of yours.
Well, let's get back to you, Wayne.
Uh-oh.
Let's tell folks again.
See, Kara doesn't like to talk about Kara.
She doesn't.
No.
Would much rather be in this spot over here. Mr. Powers is in concert tomorrow at 7 o'clock, and you will have physical copies of the CD.
Yes, we do. I guarantee it. You can't get them online for another couple of days, but you can get them on Kalamazoo Mall.
Yeah. This music feels good. It feels familiar and fresh. Like, it really comes from your point of view, you know, and your honesty, you know, saying who you are right now and bringing your life experience to it. I'm really in admiration of the way you grab at life, the way, you know, opportunities.
You only go through once that I know of. And, you know, you better follow your passion. You better, because you can't go back. And, you know, I've wasted time in my life, as we all have. But I've never wanted to. I always try not to. And if you try not to, there's always going to be time that you waste. But, you know, maybe that time isn't wasted. Maybe that time was meant to recharge your batteries. Maybe that time was meant to just sort of rest and get a new perspective and be able to see things a different way. Sometimes that takes time in life. And so those times are valuable because they were needed to get to the next step. But when I get to the next step, I'm there. I'm there full bore. I hold nothing back.
Well, last we were following the thread of your life experience, we were in Los Angeles, and you were working as an actor and an improviser, and I'm curious if you'd pick it up from there a bit and tell us where...
Well, I was talking about how I'd really achieved one of my great goals, which was to do a TV series that was, you know, that I had more control over, and I did. I mean, I was able to... The producer was Scoey Mitchell, who was one of the great... people don't know him as well as they should, but he was one of the pioneer African-American stand-up comedians back in the days when Flip Wilson was starting and Bill Cosby and all these other comedians were starting. Godfrey Cambridge, Scoey Mitchell. And he spells it with three L's, M-I-T-C-H, three L's, L-L-L. Just to be obstinate. He's just a difficult sort of person. I love him. He's still one of my dearest friends, and he's in his upper 80s now, and he's still with us, thank God. He's still one of my closest friends. He produced this show. He directed it. He wrote a lot of it, and it was the second series I did for him and with him. So, you know, we had a sort of a simpatico sense of humor, and he was also a great pioneer behind the camera for African Americans, because Black folks didn't produce shows. You know, that's just that simple.
No.
That was a white folks' situation. And he kind of broke that barrier. Not kind of, he did. He broke that barrier before Cosby, before anybody. And he was doing his own shows for NBC. And he stopped performing. He was an actor and performer. You can see him still on a lot of, he's on the Game Show Network. He's on a lot of those, like, Tattletales with his wife, Claire. And he's on a lot of those shows. But he was really behind the scenes for many, many years. And I love doing that show with him because he gave me some green light. Give me a little green light. Let me do something. Okay, we'll do it your way, what's on the page. But then, can I try something? And he always let me try something.
Wow.
And so we got a lot of running gags that way. We developed the show that way. And so we did that. And then we got canceled after two successful seasons because of politics of show business and network television. So I was beyond upset about that, because, you know, we did everything right. And so I said, I got to get back to control. And I said, where am I going to have control? And that was in music, because I can control the music. The album you're listening to, it's me. It's all me. It is, you know, when you, as an artist, in whatever medium you have, when you initiate a project, you have a vision that steers you and stirs you on to that project. Well, I had a vision. But very often the vision changes, or, you know, it just goes away because other people get involved and you have to settle. And I didn't settle. Mm-hmm. Now, the vision changed a little bit because my life changed. And so you'll see that, you know, what was originally intended to be a ballad album, sort of not along, you know, along the lines of Only the Lonely, you know, Frank Sinatra's classic album. There were other albums that were all what we call torch songs, or what I, you know, being a singer back in the day, we used to call saloon songs for saloon singers like myself. And it evolved because my life changed. And it evolved, and I said, I can't sing a whole album of sad tunes. I've got to bring it up. So we split it. And there's an evolution in the album, as there are evolutions in life. So the album allows you to explore both ends of love in your life.
Mm-hmm. It's called If Love Were All, and it's available online in various download capabilities. Yeah. But you can get your hands on your own copy tomorrow night at the Union Cabaret.
And I'd love to sign it for folks. We'll be there. I'll sign them for you.
I'm going to have to get you to sign this one here.
I will do it. Okay. I'd be honored to do it.
All right. Well, that would be wasting listeners' time at the moment.
All right.
But right after we're done here.
I write a little quicker than that.
Well, we do need to catch up with how you ended up in Kalamazoo and making this community your home for a while, at least.
Yeah, that's kind of a wild story. You know, things happen. You know, sometimes I let life lead me.
Sure.
And after the earthquake, I lost my home in the Northridge earthquake in California, and that's where we broke up the band. We were 4:31 in the morning on Martin Luther King Day. In, what was it, 1992, 93, something like that. Yeah, 93, 94, somewhere in there. And
were you at home?
Yeah, 4:31 in the morning. Yeah, my wife and my two little kids. And I had been talking about getting my kids out of L.A. for quite a while. They were young. And I just love my two boys. And I wanted them to have a childhood like I had. You know, I grew up in the suburbs of New York. And so you could, you know, you get to the city, you know, with mom and dad, but you could ride your bike, and you could, you know, it was a different way of, part of it is the time, the era, but part of it also was the place. And so L.A. was not, we lived in great areas, but I remember a vivid occasion where my older son, Nick, I was taking him out to ride his bike, and we had a corner house in a beautiful area, cul-de-sac and all that. And he had the training wheels on, and he was on the sidewalk. And I said, okay, Nick, now you ride your bike down to the corner, but don't turn the corner where Daddy can't see you, and then ride back, you know. And as he's doing it, I'm thinking, what the heck kind of way is this to ride your bike? You know, I mean, that's no way to ride your bike. You know, when I ride your bike, it's, you know, I'm going out ride my bike. Okay, we'll be home before dinner or your mother will kill you. That was the way to ride your bike. So I realized these children were not having a childhood. And I don't know that I could provide them, no matter how successful I was, I didn't know that I could provide them with a childhood. And I said, they have one chance to grow up. I've hit stuff in my bucket list. I don't need to prove myself. Okay, I'm not a huge name. I'm not, but that doesn't matter to me. I've done artistically what I needed to do to feel okay about myself and to achieve what I wanted to achieve. And I said, well, now how about my kids? And so I wanted to get him out of there. And we kept putting it off. You do one more concert, one more TV show, one more movie of the week, one more this, one more that. And we wound up staying, you know, staying and staying. And then the kids were being driven home from private school, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, bullet holes in the car, you know, two rival gangs shooting each other. Nobody was hurt. But I said, that's it, we're out of here. And so we started looking. And again, it's, you know, we're looking slowly, you know. And then the Northridge earthquake happens, 4:31 in the morning. I got everybody out of the house. Things are collapsing and falling down, and everybody's out in the front yard, 4:31 in the morning, my wife and my children. And I just looked up, and I said, I hear you. We're going now, okay? We're going. And that was it. So I went to Charlotte, North Carolina, and needed a thing to do there. I didn't know what to do there. I had nothing to do there. My entire career was in L.A.
Yeah.
And in order to do television,
it's not a lot of entertainment industry.
No, especially then. Charlotte was a sleepier town than it is now. Yeah. And so I wound up opening a tea house. Because I love tea.
And I
will have to do a show about tea. And then I was doing talk radio there at one of the pioneer, second oldest station in the country. And had a ball, WBT. And I was the guest host and, you know, did a lot of guest hosting and special programming and stuff over the years. And loved that. And so then... Charlotte was getting too big for me. It was with NFL and light rail and a mayor who was, you know, on an FBI sting and going to prison. I said, I was going away from this. So I started looking around, and the local heritage station in town, which we won't mention on this station, but was looking for someone to take over their morning show. It had been vacant for over a year. And I said, oh, Kalamazoo. I had not been there. And I said, but I've heard wonderful things about it. So I came up for a visit, and I just fell in love with Kalamazoo. I love the people. I love the history. I love the architecture, the arts community, its proximity to both Detroit and Chicago. There's so much in Kalamazoo. And so I said, I'm going to do this. And I came and did the morning show for a relatively short amount of time. We increased the ratings by over 40% in a matter of months, but that didn't help any because the station is no longer locally owned by Fetzer. I just want to, you know, these are all
yes,
conglomerates that own
again,
radio stations these days, and they really don't care about communities as much. And that was very frustrating for me, so we had a disagreement, and I left. But I didn't want to leave Kalamazoo, so I kind of stayed here and kind of figured what the next thing is going to do. I'm unfortunately going to be leaving Kalamazoo coming up, but I got to stay here for 3 years, and I'll always come back and visit because I just love Kalamazoo. I really do.
We've been very lucky to have you, and I hear you're just going down the road a little ways.
Not far, Chicago. Yeah. I'm actually, love lost and love found. I'm engaged to be married in September.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And we just purchased a home in Chicago, right on the suburbs of Chicago. And so my grandson and my son have relocated there. One of my two sons has relocated to Chicago.
Oh, how exciting.
And it is exciting.
Yeah.
And my future wife has children. They're grown, except for one who's 8 years old. So I get to be a daddy again, too. And I'm excited about that. So there's a lot of love and family, and I'll be able to do my music and be able to come back to Kalamazoo and be able to use Chicago as a launching pad to go elsewhere.
Do you know that great big piece of classical music called Carmina Burana?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
It starts with the wheel of fate.
Yes.
Turning.
Yes.
Turning. Oh, Fortuna.
Yes, exactly.
Your life reminds me of this wheel of fate.
Because it's truth. It's the same for everybody. If you just acknowledge it, just recognize it, it's there for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. The times I've been most frustrated are the times I haven't recognized, I haven't been open to that.
Well, this is a time to celebrate because you have a landmark new album called If Love Were All, and I've loved having you here today. I want to fit in another song, and then we can have a quick goodbye after that. I'm going to let you choose.
Oh, my gosh. Here. Well, this is really tough. You're asking me to choose.
There's 14 tracks, listeners.
I know.
There's a lot to choose from.
Boy, you're killing me with this. Do you want to do something up? You want to do a ballad? Do you want to do something? Do you want to do... Just in Time, maybe?
Sure.
How about that? That's the transition song on this album, actually.
You know, I'm going to have to count because your designer did not put the track numbers on there.
He did on the inside.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant. That's the problem with being my own engineer. It's like it's like not having one at all.
You know, I had this designed right here in Kalamazoo. The album was designed in Kalamazoo.
Well, I would. I'll take it all back.
And they did a great job. I got to get Portage Printing, Mr. Craig Vestal, who is a great friend. He did a brilliant, beautiful job of designing the album graphically.
Well, that's another reason to pick it up. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, at the Union Cabaret and Grill. You'll be there for 2-3 sets at least.
Yeah, we'll be there from 7 to 10.
Wonderful. Let's hear Just in Time. Here's Wayne Powers once again.
Just in time, you found me. Just in time, before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed, my bridges all were crossed, nowhere to go. Now you're here, and now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I've found my way. For love came just in time, you found me just in time, and changed my lonely life. That lovely day, just in time, you found me. Just in time, before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed, my bridges all were crossed, nowhere to go. But now you're here, and now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I've found my way. For love came just in time, you found me just in time, and changed my lonely life that lucky day. Fear, I've found my way. For love came just in time, you found me just in time, and changed my lonely life that lovely day.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, we got that in just in time,
just
didn't we?
Just in time. Well, that's three songs, and there's 11 more beautiful tracks on this album. You can
Well, maybe someday you'll play one or two in my absence on this show. Or
maybe our signal
back.
Might get down to Chicago.
That would be nice. You know, I've alerted people to stream the show.
Great.
I have.
It'll be online for those who missed the first part as well.
Yeah.
So
good deal.
Well, Wayne Powers, anything left to mention before?
No, it's just that this, I guess, I hope to see, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you got to let me know when you're performing in town. You got to let me know when you're performing in town. Well, I'm performing in town tomorrow night, folks. So you're either there or this will probably be your last chance because I'm getting ready to move to Chicago, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a big chance.
But you know what? I got to find a way to come back because Kalamazoo is, it's been exactly what I needed. You know, we talk about things happen when you need it, if you're open to them. And Kalamazoo has been exactly what I needed when I needed it. I love this town, love the people here, love the history. Love the traditions of Kalamazoo. It has a great heart. It's a city truly with great heart. And that just really resounds with me. It resonates with me, I guess is the right word.
I think you touched a lot of people while you're in your short time here. And it's always nice to say, you know, that the impression you left is one of having given us all a little joy and friendship. So,
well, hopefully a little love.
If you want to go all the way and say love, I'll
well,
take
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah, because if love were all, and it is, here's a way of plugging the title of the album.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe we should go out with that song.
Would you? Yeah, that's a great song. That's just me and a piano. It's the only one on the album. It's just me and a piano.
Well, Wayne, have a great time tomorrow night. I'll
see you
down there.
Thank you. And I'll tell you, it's tomorrow night, Bill Seston and Ethan Bozema are going to be with me on stage there. Two wonderful local musicians.
You want to sign us off?
This is Wayne Powers saying, I love you, and I hope you have lots of happiness and joy. This is a song called If Love Were All. It's written by Noel Coward. Doing what I can, and crying when I must, and laughing when I choose. Hey-ho, if love were all, I would be lonely. The more you love someone, the more you put your trust, the more you're bound to lose. Although when shadows fall, I wish that only somebody splendid really needed me. Someone affectionate and dear. Cares would be ended if I knew that she wanted to have me near. But I believe that since my life began, the most I've had is just a talent to amuse. Hey-ho, if love